them only a promise of the bread of life without giving them the actual bread itself, and that comes with the deepening. Those who teach the masses and those who deepen are not in competition. They are partners in this glorious vital enterprise. We must fan this united spirit into a flame that will set on fire the entire nation, the world. Teaching is the match. Without it, there is no light. Teaching is the match. Deepening is the fuel that will keep that fire burning after the teaching has ignited in the first place. Now, you might just as well make up your mind to it that without both, enthusiastically supporting each other, there can be no true and lasting victory. That's what we found in other parts of the world, and here's your chance from preventing those same mistakes happening here. And that is a fact. Enthusiastically supporting each other. Signed, Shoghi Effendi Rabbani, Guardian of the Baha'i Faith. Signed, Universal House of Justice, Supreme Body of the Baha'i World, Source of all good, freed from all error. Signed, Baha'i National Spiritual Assembly. You will never learn a more important lesson from this study class than this one. No mass conversion campaign can live without both teaching and deepening, working together simultaneously, harmoniously, lovingly, cooperatively, and above all, enthusiastically. Never forget this. Did I hear someone say, "Stop me"? I can understand it. We all must be exhausted. But let's stop anyway. I mean, this is a long study class. It's concentrated. But it's of supreme importance to us at this stage in the growth of the work among the masses. We're not quite halfway through the first half of the study class, so let's take a breather. Say, 10 minutes. You can talk over what we've shared so far. Do whatever you want. Stretch, whatever you like, and then I'll see you in about 10 minutes. But don't forget to come back. I mean, the best is yet to come. Of course, unless you're leaving right now for a pioneering post or a goal city on the home front, then that's all right. I mean, that's what the study class is all about. Or you may get back late if you've gone out to mail a substantial contribution to the National Fund. That's what the study class is all about, too. Or maybe you just want to walk across the room and say, "Alcibiades, I was wrong. Forgive me. Let's work this out together." Or, "Anastasia, how silly these differences of opinion between us have been. Let's begin again, as the beloved guardian suggested, in a fresh spirit of forgiveness and love and unity, and set this country on fire. What do you say, Anastasia?" Of course, if there is an Alcibiades or an Anastasia present here, then my apologies. I didn't know you could make it. I'm just kidding. You know, once in Europe, I used the name Mrs. Shigemitsu because I felt perfectly safe. Unhappily, there was a Mr. Shigemitsu there who was a seeker. He came up later and he asked me what his wife had done. I told him that she had chosen a wonderful man for a husband, and it worked out all right, so I don't like to take any chances. All right, I'll see you back here in 10 minutes at the launching platform, from where, before this gathering is over, we'll all go zooming out into the field of mass teaching. But now let's get back to mass conversion. What we do here at this conference can make a tremendous difference. The main thing is for everyone to become firm in the idea, dedicated believers in the idea of mass conversion. Not just say we believe in it, but offer ourselves in dedication to accomplish it, in consecration. And not be put off or become lukewarm because of problems that seem to arise from this sudden, rapid spread of the faith. Be confident, be sure, be radiant. The National Spiritual Assembly of Canada, in their editorial in their December Baha'i News, points out that sometimes it's difficult for those of us who required considerable time and reading and study before entering the faith, not to view with suspicion and doubt those souls who enter the faith quickly on a wave of spirit. Now, we've got to fight this tendency in ourselves and remove those doubts and suspicions. Baha'u'llah didn't come to the Baha'is. He came to the world. He didn't come to the educated, the privileged only. He came to the masses of humanity, all of them, without exception. "Throw wide the doors," the beloved guardian told us. Right now, indigenous people, the poor, the underprivileged, and the youth of the world, these seem to be the groups most prepared at the present time to accept mass conversion. The editorial in the Canadian Baha'i News mentioned earlier also points out that the majority of all of these groups are relatively free of the sophistication, intellectualism, materialism, and cynicism that are now corrupting a large part of society. Those who are still veiled by that materialism and intellectualism often do need longer, more time for the Word of God to penetrate and remove the veils that shut them out from His beauty. People who are relatively free of those veils can recognize the truth quickly. They feel it. They can be taught through the heart in a flash, rather than slowly and painfully through the head. Can you hear His Holiness Christ saying, "I am the light and the way, I am the Son of Man," and the Pharisee saying, "I wonder what He means by that," and the lowly fisherman saying, "Yes, Lord"? That's spiritual perception. And it may penetrate not only quicker, but have a far greater effect than that acceptance which comes only after prolonged study and questioning. Of course, this is not to minimize the importance of bringing the educated and the brilliant minds into the faith, too. That's vital. And it's just as wrong to neglect them. But the tendency of the world has been to belittle those who quickly enroll through the heart and to praise those who are considered by the world to be more desirable. Forget it. There is no difference at all between them in the eyes of God, and there should be none in ours. I repeat the Master's words from the tablets of the divine plan. Blessed are the nameless and the traceless poor, for they shall be the leaders of mankind. But the point is, we shouldn't undervalue those who in a flash see the light of Baha'u'llah and are prepared to arise and to serve it and to teach in their turn immediately, not later. And don't fear for the spiritual safety of these quickly enrolled souls, thinking that they may become an easy prey to enemies or covenant breakers because they know so little. Far from it. If they are sincere and pure-hearted, their quick perception will also readily recognize falsehood and insincerity and deceit, and will become a shield to secure them against just such attacks. But only as long as we who enroll them remember that we have to keep on with the deepening work, immediately build on their knowledge of the faith, upon that foundation of love for Baha'u'llah and that enchantment with the cause of God. And deepening is the name of the game. The early believers, both in the East and in the West, I'm quoting our beloved guardian now in a letter to Africa, these believers, he says, quoting, knew practically nothing compared to what the average Baha'i knows about his faith nowadays. Yet they were the ones who shed their blood, the ones who arose and said, "I believe," requiring no proof, and often never having read a single word of the teachings. Shoghi Effendi made it unmistakably clear that these words were meant for the whole world and not Africa alone, because he sent a message about such teaching, saying that he could see no reason why such similar victories among the masses could not be achieved in all parts of the world. Now there's another dangerous pitfall we fall into, and we have to be aware of it and carefully avoid it. That's thinking that mass conversion is only for the poor, the indigenous, and the youth. It isn't. It's for all humanity, all without exception. Shoghi Effendi, in his last message to the Baha'i world, called for a rapid increase of new believers in all walks of life. In his own words, our efforts, quoting, must be immortalized. Immortalized, mind you. Must be immortalized by an unprecedented increase in the number of avowed, note the word, avowed supporters of the faith in all the continents of the globe, of every race, clime, creed, and color, and from every stratum of society. End of quotation. Together, as lovers of the blessed beauty, we must reach the multitudes, the masses of mankind, all men. And that means just that, all men. Not my idea. You've heard from the beloved guardian on the subject. Now let's hear what our Supreme Universal House of Justice has to say. The Universal House of Justice, in its letter to all national spiritual assemblies, November 1969, urged all of us to seize this present opportunity to reach the countless waiting souls hungry and thirsty for divine guidance. Their words. No effort must be spared, and I'm quoting them again, to ensure that the healing word of God reaches the rich and the poor, the learned and the illiterate, the old and the young, the devout and the atheist, the dweller in the remote hills and islands, the inhabitants of the teeming cities, the suburban businessman, the laborer in the slums, the nomadic tribesman, the farmer, the university student, All must be brought consciously within the teaching plan of the Baha'i community. End of quotation. That's mass conversion. Every Baha'i, and these words are not mine, they're from the Universal House of Justice, every Baha'i, however humble or inarticulate, must become intent on fulfilling his role as a bearer of the divine message. Indeed, how can a true believer remain silent while all around us men cry out in anguish for truth, love, and unity to descend upon this world? Quotation ends. No wonder the Master said, "Why are ye silent? Shout! Why are ye sitting? Move!" Remember also that sometimes the practical problems of mass conversion are lost sight of in the excitement and joy of these sudden, unexpected victories. An entire community can be so caught up in this happy fever of mass teaching before realizing that the great majority of its effort, occasionally almost all of its effort, and on occasion all of it, and its resources are being spent in this one area alone, reaching the masses in the underprivileged areas where they are receptive. And of course that's a good thing, but unhappily, sometimes the other areas are neglected or forgotten for the time being, and the work there comes to a screeching halt. And the needed resources from these areas of substance are unnecessarily lost to the funds. And then we're in real trouble. In their letter to all National Spiritual Assemblies, July 13, 1964, entitled Teaching the Masses, the Universal House of Justice instructs us as follows. When teaching the masses, the prime motive should always be the response of man to God's message and the recognition of his messenger. Those who declare themselves as Baha'is should be enchanted with the beauty of the teachings and touched by the love of Baha'u'llah. The declarants need not know all the proofs, history, laws, and principles of the faith, but in the process of declaring themselves, they must, in addition to catching the spark of the faith, become basically informed about the central figures of the faith, as well as the existence of laws they must follow and an administration they must obey. End of quotation. Now, sometimes in our mass teaching, we forget about that, don't we? After declaration, the Universal House of Justice continues, the new believers must not be left to their own devices. Through correspondence and dispatch of visitors, through conferences and teaching courses, these friends must be patiently strengthened and lovingly helped to develop into full Baha'i maturity. End of quotation. Now, of course, we don't want head nodders in the faith. I mean, do you believe? Yes, all right, you're a Baha'i. I mean, they're not really. Not unless they've heard the name of Baha'u'llah, accepted him as the promised Redeemer of men, and love him in the faith, and have caught that wonderful spark of the faith and become enchanted by it. I didn't say that. The Universal House of Justice said that. The Beloved Guardian said that, and that's an important distinction. That's the quality that we can build on. I mean, these instructions are also clear. It's astonishing that we shouldn't know exactly how to do all this. And if we do know, I mean that we could still ignore the advice given on the subject, since it's unfailing, infallible, and our only safeguard and protection. You know, you can laugh at what I said there about head nodders if you want, but I feel that it's important to share with you some of the experiences that have been gained by the faith in mass teaching around the world, so that we can avoid these pitfalls. I mean, what a pity if we too, now that the mass teaching work is just beginning, should mistakenly forget to follow carefully this infallible guidance we receive on these matters from Shoghi Effendi, the Universal House of Justice, and repeated to us by our National Spiritual Assemblies. That's tragic. And it happens. We've found in certain areas around the world that sometimes the teachers there, the mass teachers, are so eager to set an impressive record that rather than make certain that the eager new soul actually does know who Baha'u'llah is and loves him, they'll enroll these people on the most vague and general principles in their enthusiasm and love for the faith, mistaken, but for their love for the faith. I mean principles in things that hardly anyone would disagree with. For example, you love all mankind, don't you? Yes. Well, then you're a Baha'i. I mean, after all, Baha'u'llah's faith teaches the oneness of mankind. Do you believe that the world should have peace? Well, certainly. Well, then you're a Baha'i. We've got a wonderful peace program. I mean, don't laugh. Really, it's happened. And the pity is, it's not fair to the seeker. The saddest thing about such teaching is this. The moment we do it that way, if we know what our instructions are. If we don't, then of course it's a matter of education. But if the teachers know what we've been told to do, and still they continue this way because they're anxious, you know, to get the faith started with numbers, then the sad thing about it is that the divine protection goes out of the teaching campaign. If such methods are used, they're contrary to what we've been instructed to do. If we don't know, we must find out. If we know, we have to stop it. Otherwise, the integrity of the faith is compromised. Sooner or later, and mostly sooner, even those seekers will lose faith in us as teachers of the cause of God, and they'll lose faith in the cause itself. And those who are opposed to mass teaching among the believers, and there are some, although there shouldn't be one single person in any country who doesn't want mass teaching, there are some. And these, however few, are encouraged in their belief that it's wrong to have mass teaching because they feel that this is exactly what is happening with mass teaching. People who are not prepared are coming in. Now, that attitude is just as wrong. And anyone who, having that attitude, begins to withdraw from the work or not to be enthusiastic about it and has a lack of support for the proper kind of mass teaching, that's equally wrong, you see. It's tragic. Just as sad and wrong as the very thing they themselves are complaining about. And one is not a bit better than the other. And neither are necessary, since we've been told just exactly what to do. You see, you'll find that souls who are enrolled in this manner, contrary to our instructions, will never become active in community life. You'll find the attendance at your feasts will be alarmingly small, although your numbers may be surprisingly large among the new believers. And contributions to something they don't understand will either be minimal or missing entirely. And problems will grow in direct proportion to the lack of obedience we show in our instructions about how to bring in the masses. Those very pure-hearted souls who were wrongly introduced to the faith might have become dawnbreakers of this age, heroes and heroines, if we had really told them what we were instructed to tell them. And how sad to think that what they both lost and we lost just because we wanted to be impressive in our numbers. Now, that's probably not happening to you, but it has happened. And so this is put here as a warning. And not to stop the mass teaching work. There is nothing more important. Just don't let it happen here. We've been told how to do it by two infallible sources. That's enough. If disagreements arise between those who teach the masses and those who deepen and consolidate them, remember the things in this study class and immediately arise to redress the wrong and change the method back to those given to us by Shoghi Effendi, the Universal House of Justice, and so clearly laid out for us by our national spiritual assemblies. Nothing is more important than reaching the masses now, immediately. Nothing. It is a command of God. The most important lesson we could learn from this study class would be to dedicate our lives, our resources, everything we own to this task of reaching the multitudes. Throw wide the doors and open to them the paradise of Baha'u'llah's teaching and laws, which are the basis for the future world order, the kingdom of God on earth. Don't let anything stop the mass teaching, and don't let anything stop the mass deepening and consolidation of these same believers. Teaching is the blueprint, deepening and consolidation are the bricks and mortar, and each without the other is meaningless. So we must never permit mankind to be deprived of this one hope, the sole remedy for its redemption, because of our own misunderstandings, our disputes, our disagreements, or our obstinacy. Beloved friends, let me give you a simple example of how our own failure to turn to this source of guidance, this infallible guidance that we have on mass teaching, sometimes can delay us, interrupt us, and unhappily, occasionally put an end to the work of reaching the masses in the disappointment that follows and the lack of unity. This is on such a simple subject as door-to-door teaching. I mean, you'd be surprised at the trouble that can cause. And it shouldn't. Some immature communities have become embroiled in lengthy debates on it. Some even divided. And sometimes they're split apart into camps. Some that are for it, some are against it, and so on. You can't imagine the time that is what? Lost. It's heartbreaking. I say immature, not because they're not wonderful devoted souls, they are, but because they have forgotten the first step to solving such problems. Turn to the writings. What did they say about such things? If there's no answer, turn to the local assembly. If there's no answer from them, then the National Assembly can help. And if they have no answer yet for that problem, the Universal House of Justice will give us divine infallible guidance. And we only have to turn to the Baha'i News, July 1966, where those generals of the nine-year plan gave us the guidance so that the battlefronts everywhere would not go suddenly into those frozen winter camps where everything comes to a screeching halt. It's called door-to-door camp.